listening to Honestly Aging by Friends Life Care Vigor, a podcast where we explore what it's like getting older, the peaks, the valleys, and everything in between. In this season of Honestly Aging by Friends Life Care Vigor, we're covering topics related to solo aging. I'm your host, Cheryl Proska. Let's grow old together. On today's episode, we're doing something a little different. My colleague, Jennifer Schwartz, and I are going to co-interview Friends Life Care member, Sarah Pilling, to talk about her experience being a standardized patient and how it helped her more effectively talk to doctors and advocate for herself. Jennifer is Sarah's wellness coordinator with Friends Life Care. Jennifer has 20 years of experience working for Philadelphia nonprofits serving older adults and people with disabilities in her roles, including care manager and long-term care ombudsman. She holds a bachelor's degree in history and a master's degree in social work. Jennifer, would you like to introduce us to Sarah?
Absolutely. So it is my pleasure to introduce Sarah. Sarah spent her Encore career working as a standardized patient in a variety of different settings, including PCOM, the Philadelphia College of Osteopathic Medicine, the National Board of Osteopathic Medical Examiners, and the University of Pennsylvania's Medical School. Along with being a source of income, her experience as a standardized patient helped Sarah learn to talk to physicians and effectively advocate for herself. Sarah is also a Friends Life Care member. So I had never heard of the role of standardized patient until I started working at Friends Life Care and talked to various members, including Sarah, about this work. When I talk to members who work as standardized patients, their eyes just light up. They are passionate about this work and find it challenging, fulfilling, and a meaningful way to contribute to medical education. It really captured my interest to learn about standardized patients, an important and specialized job that most people have never, ever heard of. So Sarah, please tell us more about what a standardized patient does.
Well, first, thank you for having me. A standardized patient, called an SP, is an adjunct medical educator without having to be a physician themselves. In fact, it's not a positiveness to be a nurse or a physician because you tend to take over and tell and you educate the students. We do educate medical students, doctors of osteopathy, and it's really expanded to a whole range, but I'm going to limit it to young medical doctors. We get deep education, good training, and good supervision to learn how to, and we learn a script, which we're supposed to stick to like glue, that sets out a specific case that the student should figure out how to diagnose from. We learn two things that really helped me with my medical care, particularly with being for a doctor. One is not to withhold information, and the other is not to give too much.
So I think you both did a beautiful job at setting up and starting to define what a standardized patient does, what a standardized patient is. And I'd really be interested to hear, Sarah, more about your personal experience of being a standardized patient.
Fine. It was an encore career for me. I think I was in my late 60s. A friend had suggested that I might like to do it. She knew that I would like some supplemental income, but also because I do have a bit of a medical background, I had been no fault of theirs or mine, been not treated by physicians the way I would really like to. I was anxious to go in it, interested in going into it, to, in order to contribute to better education for medical students. And that really has become the importance, not only to train students how to talk to their patients and patients to respond to their teachers, their doctors, but also what came out of all of this, not for me, but for the whole industry, was that the level of malpractice suits diminished once the standardized patient program began to develop more and more, which incidentally, I believe, began in medical schools in Philadelphia. I got to be with other standardized patients of all ages. There were many young actors in it. And then there were many of us who were more into the, to represent the geriatric field. So instantly I had a community to be part of, which is a single person was important. I had shared experience with other standardized patients and they became my family for a while. My two sons live in other states, so I don't get to see them very often. The medical piece that I learned was to ask the right questions and to not be afraid to ask questions. I mean, if you're of my generation, there were things you just didn't ask anybody else about and you didn't talk about. They were almost taboo, like GI symptoms or we treated doctors sort of as gods in white coats and you let them direct it. And what I learned from working with physicians, not only Americans, but foreign medical school graduates who had come to practice in the United States, who had to take courses and pass an exam, is they weren't necessarily asking the right questions either.
So it sounds like it was both important for you personally to have that community and to have the additional income. And also you felt that, and you were in fact doing a service to help these medical professionals be able to work more closely with their patients and to be able to really build those connections. Is there anything else that you wanted to cover about the importance of this experience for you?
Yes, for me, because service was a big part of it. I'm a very pragmatic person, and this just became a way to give back. But the other important piece is what it meant to the medical students. And we heard over and over and over again that the med students in particular, who were in their second year, this was their first opportunity to be hands-on with a patient. And by us being the standardized patient in the short term is SPs, we actually gave them permission to make mistakes. And if they would make a mistake, we could give them some feedback. And we were always able to say, you know, maybe a better way to do this would be X, Y, and Z. And by the end of the semester, they were always thanking us for how we had helped them relate to their patients that they were going to have it in their third and fourth year. But we had been the guinea pig, so to speak. And it was a very satisfying feeling to think that you had given some really good teaching to someone who was going to be in the field and you had contributed to medical education.
Sarah, you talked a little bit about how you entered into this field of work. Can you talk a little bit about the type of training that a standardized patient receives either in general or in preparing for a specific scenario?
The first issue is it's sort of an informal thing. If you're a young person and you're an actor, you have intervals of time, so it fits their need. If you're an older person, you have more time. The primary issue is you have to be willing to be touched, because many things are skin on skin. We wore gowns, and privacy, personal privacy, was one of the aspects that the med students and the young docs from coming up from abroad had to learn. If you were accepted into the program, you had intensive teaching 8 hours a day for about 2 weeks, during which time you were paid. And then you took an exam, which was a staged experience with someone you hadn't worked with, where you had learned your script and you followed your script. If you passed that, then you had a trainer, and the trainer would watch you on closed circuit television, and it would be recorded. And after each encounter, you would meet with the trainer and they would give you positive feedback or negative feedback. And you were on probation for about a month. And then you were, well, set free, but you had, each person had a case, a personal case, so that the med student would be challenged. You would know what signs and symptoms to give, which signs and symptoms not to give, how to answer if they gave closed questions and they were really confusing, you did not respond to them. And we were taught how to give feedback. That took a lot of training. That was the most challenging part for me.
So I heard you touch on a couple skills that are needed as a standardized patient. I heard you say that you need to have a good memory. And I heard you say that you need to be able to give feedback. What other skills did you find were needed to be successful as a standardized patient?
Well, you needed to remember your script, but at the same time, you needed to allow the doc, the training doc, to make mistakes and perhaps take a different path. I had one case where actually my symptom was, my diagnosis should have been thyroid trouble, but most of the young docs went down the path of depression. Now, depression can be a symptom of thyroid, but it's not really not the diagnosis. So I had to be flexible at the same time that I was remembering where the script wanted me to go. And I had certain parameters of how to respond to the doc who was, the experiences were about, for young MDs and DOs, was about 15 minutes apiece. I had to be, keep time of what was going on. I had to really listen. That was one of the things that I learned the most, to understand where they were going so that I would know when to give them information and when to withhold information. It was a challenge. It was exhausting after we'd done it for 8 hours.
I can imagine.
Yeah, absolutely. Sarah, can you tell us about some of your most memorable experiences working as a standardized patient? I'm sure you have a lot of stories.
Well, I do. I'll give you two of them. One that was challenging and one that was a blessing. It was coming to the end of a work day, and the sun was fading a bit. It was just a different latitude. It was probably about 4 o'clock in the afternoon, which was important. And a young man came in to interview me and to examine me. And the interview is really important because that's when the doc, I'll call him, gathers the information, elicits information from the patient and gathers. And this young man was very tall. So what he did was he did not sit down. So I had to look up at him, and he was standing in front of the window where the light was coming in. So I could not see his face at all. And he was pretty abrupt. And there just was no relationship formed. But after these encounters, we gave what's called feedback in a particular pattern. So I was able to say to him, using what's called SP language, I really would have been helped if you had sat down to interview me so that you and I could have developed a working relationship. Now, that was very negative, but it was a teaching moment. The other teaching moment was a case I was taking at NBOME, where a question was asked of me, pretty routine: how many children did I have? And I said, which was the standard answer, well, I used to have three. And most of the students, they just walked right over that. Didn't make a difference to them. In reality, in my own personal life, my daughter was dying of cancer. So the answer I gave was, well, I used to have three. And he looked at me and reached out his hand and took my hand. And he had sensed the way I was feeling. And he said, I am so sorry. I've lost a child of my own. Mm-hmm. And then there was silence on both ends. And there was this connection made that one would hope to have with your physician if you'd been to them for a while. This young man was very good. Another time I had a doc who thought that if he was just friendly, he could ask anything. But in fact, he was intrusive. And he put his arm around me. He thought this was a good thing. Now, within the parameters of the case, I was allowed to sort of draw myself up. And when I gave him feedback, I, again, using what's called SP language, I felt pretty violated when, without asking me, you just put your arm around me. I would have preferred that you had taken my hand. So those were just two. I mean, there were innumerable. Every encounter was different, but those are two that have stayed in my, two or three that have stayed in my mind.
And those case studies really makes the standardized patient and young doctor learning experience come to light for me. And they were three really personal experiences that you had. So I do want to acknowledge and thank you for sharing them. And I think it dovetails beautifully into the next question I did want to ask if you could cover is, and you've started covering it, was how was being a standardized patient able to help you advocate for yourself and effectively talk with physicians outside of when you're in that standardized patient role?
I've learned a lot over that. The first I learned is that physicians aren't gods. They're humans just like us, and they can make mistakes. I personally learned the language that you use in being an SP, which on a broader case is called I language. You really shouldn't make a physician angry at you if you use I language, which is I or when you did X, I felt whatever the response is. When you didn't ask me any questions and made assumptions, I really would have been helped if you'd given me a little bit more time to ask you some other questions. I also learned to be responsible for my own health care in being prepared, in writing down questions that I wanted if they were really important, even thinking about why I was going to the doctor. In changing doctors, if I just couldn't get results. I saw an orthopedist a couple of years ago for some arthritis in the back, and his comment was, well, we'll just take you in and chop away a little bone and send you home. Guess what? I never went back to that doc. Any person has a right to seek really any doctor within the parameters of their insurance. But I think the most important thing I learned was that I am really responsible for contributing to my own care. So that, for instance, I had GI problems until I was 68 years old, and I finally did something about it because I was raised in an era you didn't talk about your digestive issues. So anything is fair game, and it's our responsibility to know where we are in our own bodies and to tell the doctor. And that's what I have done. There are certain physicians I've never gone back to because of the way I felt I was treated. There are other physicians that I would go to any moment of the day. I've negotiated with my primary. I've now been a patient of his for 25 years. And I've gone to bat for myself with him, but I did it using what we call eye language, so they couldn't blow me off. And if I met a physician or had a physician who did tend to blow me off, I didn't go back again. I sought out another physician. I think that's how we, particularly single people, need to do that. And the other thing I want to say is, if you need to go to the doctor, you don't have a partner, do you have a friend who would go with you and who would take notes? Or say, Sarah, you haven't asked Dr. X about this, and you and I talked about it, and why don't you ask him that question? Sometimes a friend can push you a little bit. It was a rich experience. And I actually have talked about this method to other friends of mine who have said, that's an interesting idea. And then they've used it with their own doctors. I mean, we're human, but so are the physicians. And probably the most important question has been to have written down my questions or the topics I want to discuss. And if he's trying to whistle out the door, and I understand they're supposed to see a new patient every 15 minutes, speak up and say, you know, I'd really be helped. I've got a few more questions here. Could we make time for this? And most of the time they'll sit back down and they'll listen to you.
And that eye language can be so critical across pretty much one's entire life. Something you may want to communicate at work, something you may want to communicate in a personal relationship. And I'll share with our audience that Sarah and I have an interesting connection because I am attending PCOM to get my master's degree in organizational development. And in a lot of what we call the OD work, those I statements are just critical. So me hearing you say this, my face is lighting up that we're sharing it with our listeners because it's so important.
It can get you over a lot of rough spots. I've even used them with my sons.
Absolutely.
And they just can't, they have no basis. They can get angry, but they really have no basis for that because I'm really only talking about how I'm feeling.
Would you prefer to age independently in your own home or live in a nursing facility. I know what I'd rather do. Friends Life Care membership offers just that. Plan today for a future lived at home with vitality, independence, growth, and resilience while protecting your savings. Learn about your options at a free seminar or webinar. Register at friendslifecare.org/register or call 215-628-8964.
This message of self-advocacy and communicating your needs, it's so important to make sure medical professionals know and really understand your concerns. Any other thoughts on lessons learned or insights that you could share with others about self-advocating in medical settings?
Well, as I age, I'm not afraid to admit to my primary that I'm getting a little older here and I want to do this, but this is a struggle. How can I get to do that? Or on other occasions, I've said to him, how can we work together so that I can stay active and participate in my life? As a person living alone, I am not about to be shoveled off to wherever to live. And what I need to do is have some support so I can continue to live where I am. I don't want to give up. The other piece that perhaps I think is important, and it came out of a case that I did at Penn, where I was sort of the ditzy older woman, and my daughter was very upset that I had a boyfriend. And a palm tree had jumped out and hit me in the car, which we all know wasn't true. But part of it was in this questioning, what I was supposed to do, the standard question is, and what prescriptions do you take? And in the case, I pulled this big bag of empty bottles out. And what I learned was that seniors do not react to prescriptions, particularly multiple prescriptions, in the same way as they did older, younger people. And actually, I learned through the teachers at Penn that there are geriatricians who you can go to who will look at the long list of meds if you take them, and perhaps, and their whole focus is the interactions between these meds and older people. On a personal level, I tried that with my dad, who was living in a retirement community. I know he was taking too many, but his primary physician wouldn't agree to it, and I couldn't talk my dad into using eye language and going to it. So it's sort of not a warning, but be aware that these docs, many of them will just, in thinking they're giving good care, they keep piling on the pharmaceuticals, and they're not necessarily in the right combination to the right reaction as we get older. Yeah. And I think that's really important.
Yeah. Sarah, that case at Penn sounds really interesting. Can you tell us a little bit more about where that case went and a little bit more about the details?
Oh yeah, it was really interesting. The first time I did it was with postdoc, PhD, MD psychiatrists. These guys should know better. And I had a script and I knew how to answer it, but it illustrated how you sort of got to go where they go. So part of my case was I was having to live with my daughter in Philadelphia. My retirement community was in Florida. My boyfriend was in Florida, who my daughter didn't approve of someone my age having a man friend. And I let it be known in sort of, well, you know, she really likes me to only sit in one chair while I'm watching television. And this one male psychiatrist said to me, well, why is that? And I got sort of quiet and embarrassed. Remember, I'm playing this role. And I said, well, you know, sometimes I don't get to the bathroom quite in time. And he just says, well, we'll put you in diapers. And I responded, I'm not three. And it sort of went, it just fell apart after that. And I was able to give him feedback.
I would love to have been a fly on the wall for that interaction.
And it was a test case. I was doing it for the first time. Later on, I did it with the second year med students in more of a classroom setting because it was really just an interview. There was no physical exam. And that's when, and the faculty teaching it were these geriatricians with Penn. And that's when I really learned about the prescriptions and the multiple medicines that elderly people were taking. And that in fact, one of the combinations of what I was taking actually was contributing to periodic incontinence. And, but when this guy said, well, we'll just put you in diapers, it really was a revelation to me that they're not always right. So it was a classic. I did that a couple of times with different groups of med students, and it was very much of a learning experience for the med students. And they realized that the outburst had been inappropriate. And I also learned that sometimes you had to go with the flow rather than sticking to the script.
Sarah, in closing, I just want to ask one more thing that for you, what is most important for older adults and solo agers to know about self-advocacy? And feel free to reiterate something that you've already covered.
Well, I'm of the era where you treated all elders with respect. And I come from an age where physicians in white coats were gods. And if I've learned nothing else, I've learned that, and I've said this before, that physicians are as flawed and human as we are. And if we want to stay active and be in good health, we need to speak up. We need to speak our truth, whatever that is. We need to not sort of stay with the way we were raised, where you certainly never mentioned certain topics, certain functions of the human body. And that no matter what your feelings are, they should be honored in some way. So if I'm feeling, and COVID has been very difficult, so if I've been depressed or lonely or isolated, there's nothing wrong with that. And we just need to speak up and be partners with the people who are doing everything for us, who are the persons where we live or the friends or the physicians. I've even gone at this with a dentist who treated me not with respect and using eye language. I gave him negative feedback and actually wrote the head of the practice and said, if I have to see that guy again, I'm going to choose another dentist. And the head of the practice came back and said, listen to me. And I only see him and I only see his texts when I go to the dentist. It can have very powerful positive responses in this. And I think it's really important because physicians today are really stressed. I think we have to give them some credit, particularly in the climate we're living through. And we singles don't have to be mice. We can speak up and advocate for ourselves.
Sarah, everything you have said today has been so poignant, and I know it will help our audience feel more empowered and be able to either advocate for themselves or ask for that support when they need it and recognize it is okay to ask for help. And this was such a brave conversation, and I feel so lucky to have had it with you.
Well, I appreciate you with us generating this. It's a way to give back to other people who I don't even know. It's a way for me to remember what it was like to be a standardized patient. I stopped doing it after my daughter died because it was pretty traumatic for me and I needed time. It's just a way to stay alive and to remind myself that I can be my own advocate even now at my quote unquote advanced age. So thank you, ladies.
Yeah. And just Jennifer, thank you so much for agreeing to co-interview with me. It's the first co-interview I've done, and it was just so fun to try out a new format. So thank you so much.
My pleasure. I've really enjoyed this conversation.
Thank you to Sarah Pilling and Jennifer Schwartz for joining us today. You can learn more about Jennifer by visiting our website, friendslifecare.org. If you're interested in becoming a standardized patient, check out job listings for local medical, nursing, dental, and law schools to learn more. If you like our show, please rate, review, subscribe, and join us next time. To learn more about aging with vitality, independence, growth, and resilience, subscribe to our blog at friendslifecare.org/blog.